Coleman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. TriStar Movers with five-star service. Caroline Fenton joined by Mark Howard filling in for Jared Stillman today. How we doing, Mark?
I'm great, Caroline.
By the way, if you had the over in the Packers-Cardinals game, I am so sorry.
Really tough so scene sorry. For anyone who took the over.
Wow.
Elijah Campbell.
That had to hurt.
Elijah Campbell in for Ian Safar today. Thanks for joining us, Elijah.
Thank you. And I did take the over last night.
Oh,
and
no.
It was painful.
Well, that's all right. We'll bounce back this weekend because we've got a big Titans game, an AFC South rivalry game. The Titans heading to Indianapolis to take on the Colts. But we just learned not too long ago wide receiver Julio Jones will be out against the Colts on Sunday. Mark Howard, your thoughts. How much of a hit is this really for the Titans offense?
Well, I mean, Julio Jones has made a contribution, but he is certainly not indispensable. He definitely makes them a better team when he's out there, but we really haven't seen Julio Jones at 100%. I mean, he occasionally has made the great play. We remember, what he did at the stadium a couple of weeks ago. But, beyond that, again, load management for Mike Vrabel. And he understands it's a 17-game season. And even though this is a big game, it's really a bigger game for the Colts than it is the Titans. It'd be great if the Titans won because they'd have a 3-game lead in the AFC South. But regardless, they come out of Sunday still in first place, and there's just no need to take a risk with Julio. And I know, we're all frustrated because he can't stay on the field, but he is certainly not the only Titan, who's dealt with injuries this year.
He's not the only Titan that's dealt with injuries this year, and I can't blame, let's say, for example, Christian Fulton, because he's been on this team, he got hurt with this team, and he's been recovering. But I think my biggest bone to pick with this is that the Titans invested so much money, and they invested draft capital into Julio Jones to create this three-headed monster on this offense, to be unstoppable, to say, hey, if you stop Derrick Henry, no problem. We can throw to A.J. Brown, we can throw to Julio Jones, and this offense can feel unstoppable. That's what this Titans team invested $15 million a year into, and in my opinion, they haven't gotten the return on that investment. Well, and here we are yet again, another week in AFC South, a huge game with the AFC South, and Julio Jones is out yet again with another injury.
Well, they haven't. That doesn't mean they won't. And if the Titans go deep into the playoffs with a healthy Julio, then the deal will be worth it. But yeah, it's been frustrating on the front end, no question. But so has Dupree, Bud Dupree. And then finally last week, we started seeing some glimpses of the guy the Titans paid all that money for. And again, if he delivers, if he keeps playing at that level and, escalates it a little bit, suddenly he becomes well worth what they paid for him. So talk to me, when we get 10, 11 weeks into the season and you can get a better read on these contributions. Meanwhile, they're 5-2. And again, Vrabel has been very smart about how to get his team through this schedule, how to navigate his way through. And I think he feels like it's probably smarter to keep Julio down this weekend.
And I totally hear you, because I do think that Julio, in some capacity, was brought to this team to contribute in the postseason. So why are you going to exhaust him in week 8? But even when Julio's on the field, if you take away the Seattle Seahawks game, which I hate to do, to say, okay, take away the good things that you've done, let's just focus on the bad. But he had a great game against Seattle, 128 yards, should have been a touchdown. It was a dumb call that they took the touchdown away. But he had, on the season, he has 17 receptions, 300 yards, and no touchdowns. So even when Julio is on the field, and I know against the Chiefs he had two big catches for first downs, and he has contributed in different ways. But it seems like up until now, Julio's only contributions have been to get a first down here and there, to get the ball down the field, and not necessarily these big-time plays that Julio Jones is known for. So, and I understand holding him out for this game and saving his hamstring, using him in the postseason. But even when he is out there, I don't see the type of player that should be worth $15 million.
Oh, he's definitely lost something off his fastball. There's no question about it. He's a different kind of receiver. But again, the thing about hamstrings is they linger. And the Titans are trying to, you know, at least minimize this. And, yeah, I mean, you know, right now it doesn't look like such a great deal. But I'm not going to pass judgment, you know, seven games into a 17-game season. I still think that there's a decent chance that Julio Jones's best games are ahead of him as a Titan. And we'll see what happens beyond this week. You know, the great thing is the team isn't in crisis. The team isn't in a free fall. And they seem to be winning, you know, despite just an incredible wave of injuries.
Oh, and I don't want to take away from any of the success that the Titans have had, because beating the Chiefs, beating the Bills going into this season, I wrote in the Bills and the Chiefs as, you know, games that the Titans should lose. Maybe they could sneak a win in that tough three-game stretch against the Bills, the Chiefs, and the Rams next week. I didn't expect it to be a dominating performance against the Kansas City Chiefs, and I didn't expect two wins against the teams in going into this season that were AFC title contenders. I don't want to take away from that because the Titans have looked outstanding. It's just frustrating that Julio has continued to not be able to deliver, whether he's on the field. And when he's off the field, obviously not contributing anything, but it seems like he just cannot stay on the field. He cannot stay healthy. And that is so incredibly frustrating for a team that has invested so much of their right now and so much of their future into Julio Jones.
Yep. Fair enough.
Did you expect any sort of big plays from Julio this weekend?
I don't know, you know, I don't know his physical condition. It'd be nice, but, you know, the fact is A.J. Brown has been the better receiver, and he's more of a go-to receiver for Tannehill. So we'll see what happens. You know, they'll put, you know, there are a number of people that they can put in there, and, you know, we'll see if the Titans can prevail without him. But, you know, the Titans had a lot of success through the air last week, and it's not like Julio made a huge contribution. So,
it's true.
At least at this point, they're not losing all that much from their offensive attack.
Bring up A.J. Brown, who's been outstanding the past couple of weeks, but he is another guy who's been dealing with some injuries so far this season. I think another one of my worries that piles on top of this announcement that Julio will be out against Indianapolis is that what if there's an A.J. Brown injury? Indianapolis could easily shut down Derrick Henry. No, I don't want to say easily. Indianapolis could shut down Derrick Henry. And then that three-headed monster that you were supposed to have, where is your offensive weapons?
Well, I don't know if it was more a three-headed monster. I think it was more of a pick-your-poison offense. And the fact of the matter is, Caroline, I mean, you can sit here and talk all you want about no Julio Jones, but the last 2 weeks – the Bills and the Chiefs have tried too hard to shut down Julio or Derrick Henry, and the Titans have taken advantage of it over the top. And, you know, Derrick Henry, you know, the yards have been, you know, hard to come by with the exception of that big run, you know, against Buffalo. But, yeah, I mean, the Chiefs, you really allocated too many resources to stop Henry, and the Titans' passing game found some legs. And I expect more of the same this Sunday against Indianapolis.
Where do you, now that we know that Julio will be out, where is your biggest stake in terms of this Titans offense? What are you expecting to see against Indianapolis
this
weekend?
I'm expecting to see balance. You know, the Colts have a pretty good defense. The Colts are playing really well after a slow start. And Derrick Henry's had a lot of success against the Colts. I think he's had 4 100-yard games in a row. So, you know, we'll see what happens on Sunday when you know suddenly the Titans have been elevated to bona fide Super Bowl contender. You know, we'll see how they wear that. You know, the Titans have been and their fan base have been screaming for validation and respect. You know, for so long, well, they got it and they got it in spades, and now. You know, heavy is the head that wears the crown because, you know, they go into Indy on Sunday, you know, as the go team right now, or at least one of them in the NFL. And we'll see how they fare after having some success. It was really interesting, you know, after the win over Kansas City, where Mike Vrabel, you know, got, you know, just incensed, you know, over the mention of where this team is right now. because he doesn't want complacency to settle into his locker room. And the players know that too. Kevin Byard said they're not giving out Lombardi trophies right now after week 7. It looks pretty good for them, but in the NFL, things can change in a heartbeat. So, you know, right now the Titans are in a pretty good place. Their pass rush has been unbelievable on defense. You know, that package, you know, of four, you know, with Autry, Landry, you know, Dupree, and has been unbelievable. And they've been able to just rush four and have success, which is why they were able to cover so well against Kansas City. It's going to be tougher this week against the Colts, who have a much better offensive line than the Chiefs do. So the Titans have a lot of challenges as they go into Lucas Oil Stadium Sunday.
They do have a lot of challenges. They'll be challenged on the field. And also, I do think that there's a little bit of a mental aspect at play here. So coming up next, we said going into the Bills game, the Titans had really nothing to lose. Going into the Chiefs game, it felt like the Titans had nothing to lose. But that doesn't feel like that's necessarily the case going into this game against Indianapolis. So we will take a look at that. All show long, we are taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We're taking your calls, your texts. Julio Jones is out on Sunday in Indianapolis against the Colts. What do you think this Titans offense could look like without Julio as a threat? Caroline Fenton, Mark Howard, filling in for Jared Stillman. You're listening to Stillman & Company. You're live on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stillman & Company, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Do you want to win a pair of tickets to see Manchester Orchestra at the Ryman Auditorium on Wednesday, November 17th? Head over to YouTube and subscribe to the 102.5 The Game YouTube page, and you will enter for your chance to win to see the Manchester Orchestra live. Once you subscribe, email us at promotions@cromwellmedia.com with your YouTube handle. One winner will be chosen on Monday, November 1st. So we just learned Julio Jones will be out against the Colts this Sunday. But Mark, when we were talking about the Bills game, we said, what do the Titans really have to lose? If they get blown out by the Buffalo Bills, then it just kind of seems like, yes, okay, the Bills are solidified as one of the top teams in the AFC, and maybe the Titans just aren't up there. They didn't really have much to lose. Same thing against the Chiefs. They had a big win against the Bills, a big prove-it win against the Bills. But hey, if you lose to Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and Tyrann Mathieu and this outstanding star-studded Chiefs roster, you don't have a lot to lose. But they won both of those games. This game has a lot on the line in terms of AFC South implications.
Well, it's a divisional game, which really is almost like two games. Because if the Titans win, they're up by three. If they lose, they're up by one. Titans have a lot to play for suddenly. The stakes have definitely risen with those two wins. Because not only is the AFC South in play, but one of the best records in the AFC. And now suddenly the Titans have tiebreakers over teams like Buffalo and Kansas City. And that could play in big, you know, come December and January as far as home field in the playoffs. They're not really thinking about that, but it's going to be a byproduct if this team can keep winning. So you think about that. You also think about, is John Robinson going to do anything at the trade deadline, which is November 2nd, which I believe is Tuesday?
Yes. November 2nd.
Yeah, and my thought is, I think if he does anything, he adds a tight end. You know, maybe Hayden Hurst from Atlanta, maybe Arthur Smith.
Which makes sense. He knows the offense.
He knows the offense. And I just believe that that tight end would be the best place to go. They seem to have it covered pretty well on defense. I'm sure he'd love to add a cornerback. But, you know, you go after some of the higher-level cornerbacks, it's going to be a pretty big price. The Titans really need help at tight end, and I'll be interested to see if John Robinson fortifies that position. Michael Pruitt,
he's been great.
Who they got, you know, who got cut by San Francisco, even though he's on the Titans last year, has really been the Titans' best tight end. So, you know, wouldn't surprise me if JR went out and again did business with the Falcons.
And that was one thing that I wanted to ask you, because tight end seems fairly obvious that this team is in desperate need for some help and some depth at the tight end position. But after Caleb Farley got hurt, Christian Fulton is hurt, Jackrabbit Jenkins seems like he's been the only consistent corner on this team. A lot of fans were asking after Caleb Farley got hurt, is J-Rob going to make a move for a corner? But I think I'm with you in that the only corners that it seems like the Titans could go for at this point, I don't have free agents up in front of me, but they would either be incredibly expensive or a corner that another team wants to dump because they're no good.
Well, Kyle Fuller would cost a lot, even though he's on a one-year contract.
Evan Engram is another name that I heard
thrown
around.
Well, Evan Engram's a tight end.
I know, but in terms of just like trade, you know, it would be someone who's expensive and hurt.
Yeah, you know, Zaven Howard, with the Dolphins. But expensive. Again, that's assuming a big contract. So I could maybe see them taking a look at Fuller at cornerback. And yeah, you're right. Evan Engram and Hayden Hurst are two tight ends that SEC fans know about. Mm-hmm. But whatever the case, you know, let's see how it plays out. But it should be an interesting Sunday and then Tuesday for the Titans.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of Sunday, it's a divisional game. You said it kind of bears the weight of two games. Let's play a hypothetical situation here. The Titans win on Sunday. They beat the Colts. Kind of feels like they have the AFC South locked up. Do you agree?
I'd say they'd have a stranglehold on the AFC South, because it would also mean that they swept the Colts. So the Colts would actually have to finish ahead of them. So they would essentially be, you know, the Colts would have to be four games better than the Titans over the last nine games.
With a tough stretch coming up.
Yeah, I mean, well, they've got some easy games, they got some hard games. Mm-hmm. But that would be problematic. So the Titans would definitely be in the driver's seat, but I would never say that they've got it with nine games to go.
Let's say the Titans lose on Sunday, hypothetically speaking. What does that mean? Their spot in the AFC South is not, you know, you don't have a stranglehold over it right now. It seems like the Titans are in a comfortable spot in the AFC South. A possible bye in the first week of the playoffs, is that even in play anymore?
Well, only one team gets a bye the way the playoffs are going to be structured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, only the top seed in the AFC.
Yeah, so, you know, that's more, you know, and listen, I remember the year the Titans had a bye in the playoffs. And they lost to the Ravens the next week here. And still, in many regard, is the most heartbreaking game in franchise history. But, they lose that game. It's sort of on. And the Colts, give them credit. You know, they kind of rope-a-dope their way through the first 7 weeks of the season. They got a huge win at San Francisco. Carson Wentz is playing much better, starting to resemble the guy who starred at, you know, in Philadelphia, and this is just exactly why they made the deal for him, and because they thought that Frank Reich was the quarterback whisperer, and apparently he is, because he's getting a lot, out of his guy, and this is going to be a really interesting game on Sunday. He's not going to have two sprained ankles this time around. It's going to be a lot more mobile, a lot more dangerous. And that, to me, is going to make it a really, really good game.
And, you know, you look at the outlook at the rest of the schedule. I mean, the Titans, they have the Rams coming up on their schedule, which is going to be an incredibly difficult game to win, especially on the road, a long road trip out to the West Coast at L.A. But from there, I mean, you got the Patriots, you got the Steelers, 49ers. Nothing on the rest of your schedule. You got two games against the Texans and the Jags, and I don't want to, you know, knock on wood, I don't want to jinx anything, but those all feel like games that the Titans should win.
Well, they're winnable, but
winnable, yes.
The Steelers and 49ers are not going to go quietly. I mean, the Steelers will always play you tough. So will the 49ers. After this week, maybe the only game the Titans aren't favored in is against the Rams. And they could be favored in that one too. So, yeah, you're right. Every game the rest of the way, it would look winnable.
So, I mean, even I said yesterday, Jared said, you know, your shot at getting the top seed in the AFC is completely gone if you lose to the Colts. I feel like it's way too early in the season to say that. To say, let's say, you know, in some world where the Titans win out, if they lose to Indianapolis, they finish the season 14-3. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen. That's asking a lot from the Titans. I'm not, you know, counting out the fact that they could drop one of these games, like you said, to the 49ers, to the Steelers. But it just feels way too early in the season to count out the Titans if they lose this game. Of course, the road gets more difficult.
Count out the Titans. They'd still be in first place.
But their road gets more difficult. I understand that. But it's just, I think it's just way too early to say that the Titans have no shot at getting that top seed in the AFC if they do not beat the Colts this Sunday.
The top seed, I would agree with. But as far as the AFC South, you know, I would still like their chances. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, you wanna be thought of as an elite team. These are the kind of games you have to win. There's no question about it. And it's going to be tough for the Titans. You're coming off two grueling, you know, mentally draining games against AFC heavyweights, and now you got to go on the road and play your chief division rival. And that's what makes this thing interesting.
It is going to be interesting indeed. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We're taking your thoughts on the Titans. They're going to Indianapolis this weekend. What are your predictions? What are your thoughts? But coming up next, we will take a look into kind of a comparison of the Titans roster against the Colts roster. Where does Mark think in each position group, which teams have the advantage here? So we will get into that coming up next. But before we do that, I want to tell you about BetUS. It is my favorite sports book. We have a World Series game tonight, so get in on the action and do it with BetUS. They've been America's favorite sports book for over 25 years, and that is exactly why I endorse BetUS. They've been around a long time, so with BetUS, you know that you're getting integrity, longevity, and you know that when you win with BetUS, that you are going to get paid. Plus, they offer everything. They have live betting, MMA, golf, horses, esports, all kinds of crazy prop bets. If you want to put money on it, I'm going to bet that BetUS has it. So call them today, and they will walk you through setting up an account. 1-800-79-BETUS is their phone number. Just call 1-800-79-BETUS. Nobody in the industry gives bigger bonuses than BetUS, so if you join now and you mention the promo code GAME, G-A-M-E, you can get a sign-up bonus on your first deposit. Nobody in the industry beats BetUS. I bet with them, and so should you, so go now to BetUS.com. Join today, put in promo code GAME, G-A-M-E, for a sign-up bonus on your first deposit. That is BetUS.com. ESPN 102.5, The Game, Stillman and Company. You can join us in partnering with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, LLS, Light the Night. Light the Night brings light to the darkness of cancer through hope, research, and support for patients and families. Through this inspirational nationwide movement, we raise awareness and funding for groundbreaking research and treatment options to eliminate cancer. Nashville's Light the Night will be virtual and take place on November 4th. Learn more at lightthenight.org/TN. Caroline Fenton, Mark Howard filling in for Jared Stillman today. The Titans are on the road this weekend, taking on the Indianapolis Colts, a healthy Carson Wentz this go-around. Now, Mark, I want your thoughts on this, because I think that this is a very different Colts team than we saw week three, obviously. Quentin Nelson is healthy. Carson Wentz is healthy. He's, poor thing, had his ankles taped up. He barely even had ankles under him in week three. But they had a big win against the 49ers last week. How good is this Colts team? It sounds like a silly question, but is this Colts team good?
Yeah. Yes, they're very good. And you look at their numbers, and it's kind of weird. You know, you match them up, you know, against the Titans, and they're better in a lot of things statistically. Now, you know, we can sit here and argue, you know, who's better. You know, but the fact of the matter is, you know, you look at every position group, and the Colts have a notable edge. I think Derrick Henry's better than Jonathan Taylor right now, but you know, the Colts have Marlon Mack and Nyheim Hines, and that's a pretty good backfield. I think the Titans are hurt by the fact that, and I thought it was absolutely huge that Mike Vrabel kept Derrick Henry in. To me, well past the time when he should have been on the sideline, because he really doesn't trust another running back. And the Titans right now don't have a lot of depth there. It doesn't matter who you're talking about. It's Derrick Henry left, Derrick Henry right, and Derrick Henry up the middle. And, you know, Darrington Evans is getting healthier, and he needs to be more a part of this offense. That's why they drafted him, as a changeup back, as a guy, you know, who can touch the ball 10 times a game, you know, be it running it or catching it. So that, to me, is another component of that offense that needs to change. You know, otherwise, they are, you know, Derrick Henry, you know, we're talking about almost 450 carries he's on pace for, which is absolutely insane. As far as quarterbacks are concerned, you know, Tannehill's numbers have dipped. I mean, there's no way around it. He's got 7 touchdown passes, 5 interceptions. All his other important numbers are down. And Carson Wentz, say what you want, 11 touchdown passes and 1 interception. That looks a lot better than Tannehill's number.
Pretty good.
I'm not saying that he's a better quarterback. I think it's pretty close to a push. But still, the Colts have better tight ends. There's no doubt about that with Doyle and Mo Alie-Cox. They're top 2 receivers. You know, Pittman and Pascal. Better than any of the top Titans 2 receivers, which doesn't mean that I take Pittman over A.J. Brown. But
yeah,
still.
I don't know if I would take Michael Pittman over A.J. Brown.
But still,
you can make an argument either way.
On defense, the 2 D lines are both really good. You know, with DeForest Buckner up there and the rest of the big guys they have. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a pretty scary group. Titans don't have a linebacker like Darius Leonard. I mean, Darius Leonard is an all-pro. And I understand that David Long Jr. Is having a good season.
Outstanding.
But, you know, the Titans just don't have a linebacker. The secondary, Titans have better safeties. And at this point, I don't know how you could say the Titans have better cornerbacks. The Colts have mediocre cornerbacks. But the Titans might be below mediocre, but whatever the case.
The Titans have injured cornerbacks, and that's just as bad. Yeah. If they're not out there, they're not contributing, then, I mean, I don't know what you can do. But, I mean, I think if I was going into this season and you would have asked me, Carson Wentz or Ryan Tannehill, without hesitation, I would have said Ryan Tannehill. I don't think that the term game manager is a derogatory term in any means. I think that's exactly what Ryan Tannehill is, and I think that's exactly what he needs to be for this Titans offense, is reliable and consistent and a game manager. And in 2019 and 2020, that's exactly what Ryan Tannehill was. But so far this season, it's been tough to rely on Ryan Tannehill. He's been throwing interceptions. He's been getting sacked, which I think that you can place the blame on himself, on the offensive line. I think you can place the blame on injured wide receivers, on the fact that they didn't really get the time to gel in camp early on in the season. I think that you can attribute a lot of Tannehill's sacks to that. But he's been throwing interceptions, and he hasn't been the reliable, you know, game manager closer Ryan Tannehill that he's been in the past. So I think I'm not going to say that I would take Carson Wentz over Ryan Tannehill, but I think it might be more of a toss-up than some Titans fans may think.
Yeah, you look, that's a pretty good defensive line. They got Tyquan Lewis, Grover Stewart. You know, they've got some really good players. But you look at Carson Wentz, okay, he had 2 sprained ankles. His offensive line was banged up. Quentin Nelson is back. You know, that really helps him. They signed Eric Fisher, you know, from the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, he's been all right. But Wentz has been sacked 15 times. Tannehill's been sacked 21. Titans have offensive line issues, too.
Yeah.
And the thing about Wentz, if he gets the ball off in 3 seconds or less, his passing numbers are absolutely through the roof. So this is going to be a challenge, you know, for the Titans front four. I call them the lads. Because it's Landry, Autry, Dupree, and Simmons.
I like it.
I do.
It's a fun little term.
It is, and it's an easy way to remember that.
Good one, Mark.
I know Rex Road called them the law firm, but I'm calling them the lads. Sick the lads on them, because those guys played, you know, most of the snaps against the Chiefs. They only blitzed, I think, once. And that might be a luxury they can't afford against the Colts, against that offensive line. So It'll be interesting to see if they can get pressure on Wentz, because there's a double-edged sword there. Not only do they need to get pressure on Wentz, they need to get it, you know, pretty quickly, because otherwise, you know, he gets the ball off in 3 seconds or less. He's been absolutely money.
We'll go to your phones. Phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have a Colts thought, we're taking your thoughts all show long. But Brian texts into the text line and says, everyone is talking about how great the Colts are playing, but they did that against a horrible Houston team, a horrible Miami team, and a 49ers team going the wrong direction. Can we wait to judge the Colts until they play a good team?
You know, fair assessment. Winning in San Francisco against the 49ers, to me, validated the Colts.
I don't know I'm there yet. Definitely validated them more than the Dolphins and the Texans. But, yeah. I mean, a banged up Jimmy G that I think the fans are ready to move on from. I don't think this 49ers team is a win that you can stick a feather in your cap for.
Well, I disagree, but that's fine. You know, yes. Are they a Super Bowl contender anymore? No, but they're still pretty good. But whatever the case, yeah, we'll find out. They are playing better, that's for sure. And yeah, the Titans have had the tougher schedule up to now, no question about it. But yeah, we'll find out.
We will find out on Sunday. Ben texts into the text line. Now, we have two different Bens that listen to the show. We have Indy Ben and we have Ben. And this is just Ben, but we have some thoughts from Indy Ben that I want to get to as well. But Ben texts in and says, talking about Julio being out on Sunday, and says, if we don't get a ring, Julio was a waste. The time that they are supposed to be getting chemistry is unmeasurable and being wasted. No ring, that warrants some level of blame for trading for an expensive part-time player that we already knew was injury-prone and old. It's unacceptable.
Okay. I don't think the Titans saw it that way when they did their due diligence on him, and I think they felt like he might be the final piece to the puzzle. So we'll have to find out. The jury is still out on that. Hasn't gotten off to a great start, but the jury is still out on Julio Jones here.
I don't know if I'm willing to say that if there's no ring, Julio was a waste. But in your opinion, what do you need to see from Julio Jones for you to say, yep, good deal, worth it?
Need to see Julio Jones.
Well, that's a start. But we've seen Julio Jones, and he had a great catch against Buffalo. He had a great game against Seattle, but it wasn't a $15 million game against Seattle.
Yeah, I don't know if he's ever going to put up the numbers that he did in Atlanta. It's just a different deal here. It's a more balanced offense. You got Derrick Henry, you know, getting a lot of touches. He just needs to be out there. And you know, hopefully a weapon. But, you know, in terms of, I'm not going to put any numbers on him because, you know, everybody was saying before, is A.J. Brown, will A.J. Brown and Julio both end up with 1,000 receiving yards? Doesn't seem likely now, but we'll see.
Now, Indy Ben texts into the text line and says, both the Colts and Titans are similarly built, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if either team wins. A blowout game would be very far-fetched, especially with Wentz currently playing better than Tannehill.
Yeah.
I don't think that, me personally, you may think differently. I don't think that this is going to be a blowout game from either side by any means.
No, it's, the way these games usually go, they're pretty close, and a lot of times they go back and forth. And the Titans' identity has been, forged this year, as a team that's going to be a tough out. And they've played, you know, really well the last 2 weeks. And I think, you know, they view this game, you know, they lose this game, the last two wins, it doesn't wipe out the last two wins, but it certainly diminishes them a little bit. I mean, I'm sure Vrabel's telling them, great teams win this game. So we'll see how the Titans react Sunday.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We're taking your Titans thoughts, your calls, your texts. Our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We're taking your thoughts all show long. But coming up next, I want to take a quick Titans breather because there is a certain deadline in Knoxville that is coming up today. So we will get into that coming up next. Caroline Fenton, Mark Howard filling in for Jared Stillman. You're listening to Stillman and Company. We are live on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we are streaming on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and the Game Nashville app. Our streaming sponsored by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Stillman & Company, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Corey Curtis at 3:15. We will talk to him about the Titans on the road at Indianapolis, his thoughts on the game, what he is going wants to see from the Titans on Sunday. So we will get into that with Corey Curtis later on this hour. But first and foremost, Mark, I wanted to talk about the deadline that is looming in Knoxville. Jeremy Pruitt gave the University of Tennessee until today to either reach a financial settlement with the former football coach. He wants $12 million. He got no money when he was fired. Said he was fired for a good reason based off of NCAA violations that the school found. He said, you either pay me or I'll come up with a list of all of these NCAA violations, all of the dirty laundry that I saw in my tenure as the head coach of the Tennessee Vols, and I will, you know, share that with the NCAA and do with that information what you would like. So today is that deadline. Now, we have not heard anything from Knoxville. I've not heard, are they going to settle? Are they going to go to court? Are they going to risk Jeremy Pruitt sharing whatever information he may have? Mark, do you think that we will get any updates today?
I personally hope Tennessee tells Pruitt and his lawyer to pound sand. I really do. Because nowhere in that letter does Pruitt admit that he was guilty of these violations, which he is.
Right.
You know, he's a slimy, scummy human being, in my opinion, with what he's trying to do. Mm-hmm. And this act of extortion, I don't think is going to work.
And I don't understand how it's legal.
Well, it's definitely legal. I mean, you can do anything you want.
It's extortion.
It's not really extortion because they'll say it's a negotiation. So, you know, he's trying to get a contract settlement. So it's not like he's acting, you know, it's not like he's asking for money that he might not have coming to him. It's just a difference of opinion, you know, as far as what he did and how the Vols, how the University of Tennessee views his tenure there. But a couple of reasons why I hope Tennessee tells those guys to kick rocks, and that is, if he does come forward with this, he'll never coach in college again. So he better be a damn good coach with the Giants, and hope that he can, maintain employment in the NFL, because he's not coming back to the SEC or the NCAA anytime soon. And here's the other thing. The NCAA, this is not your father's NCAA. The NCAA violations don't seem to be as egregious as they used to be. You know, we used to treat them like murder. I mean, it was just, even if you compensated a player for coming in, on a recruiting visit, which you were not supposed to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, coaches lost their careers over that. So he's basically, you're right. I mean, it's sort of legal blackmail with Rick Barnes and with some of the other people in the program. And a lot of these coaches are saying, or a lot of these people at Tennessee are saying, okay, show them, show me what you got. And here's the other thing. Pruitt better be on point with these accusations, otherwise he could get sued. So, I'm sure Tennessee is doing, a risk assessment of this. And it might be more prudent for them to give him a part of that settlement and everybody goes their separate ways. But basically what he's threatening is to reveal stuff that the NCAA will take and make the sanctions with the Titans even worse, or with Tennessee even worse. And what Tennessee is going to do is they're going to blame Pruitt for everything. And that might work. And just remember, the NCAA is sort of losing its grip in terms of its authority, on college athletes and college programs. So I don't think the sanctions are going to be near as serious as they might have been 5 or 10 years ago. And Tennessee might look at that and say, okay, we'll take our medicine for a year or two and just move on, but we're not paying out what essentially to them might be blackmail money, blood money. But I just, first of all, I'd love to see all this stuff come out. I just would. It would be fun. But if I were Tennessee, at least, and I don't know all the details, I would tell him to kindly pound sand.
Kindly, respectfully, kick rocks. Because I think that the ball is in Tennessee's court here. And that they could say, look, you know, whatever information Jeremy Pruitt may have, it's because he brought it to the school. We fired him. We hired lawyers to look into what Jeremy Pruitt did. We did our due diligence. We're accepting whatever violation.
They self-reported. And
yes, they did. So I think that Tennessee has at least that to fall back on. But it does kind of worry me. And Chad Withrow joins us later on in the show, so we'll get his thoughts on this as well. Yeah. Nice little visit from Chad Withrow.
My old colleague.
But it makes me worry for a few reasons that, you know, all of these sanctions looming, possible sanctions looming over the University of Tennessee football program could deter recruits away.
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Why? If I am a recruit and I'm getting recruited, let's say by...
It's not like they're going to get a 5-year ban, Caroline. I mean, I'm just telling you.
It doesn't have to be a 5-year ban.
It's not going
to
hurt recruiting that much. I just don't think it will. And I think that the only thing Tennessee's afraid of is if Pruitt's accusations, you know, raises the percentage of them getting hit with a lack of institutional control, which is usually, you know, leading to the most severe sanctions from the NCAA. But again, I think the NCAA has lost its bite, its appetite. You know, Tennessee might get a year bowl ban, but I don't think it's going to be any worse than that. I just don't think that the way the NCAA is being run now, that they are, you know, in the business of sledgehammering some of these programs. I just don't believe it. And I think because Tennessee self-reported, and you know, and just because Pruitt said something happened doesn't mean that it did. You know, so there's that. And again, I just think that that these are threats, and you know, listen, it's mutually assured destruction in a sense, because yeah, those accusations might hurt Tennessee, but Jeremy Pruitt is going to be radioactive outside of pro football. In the NFL, they don't care about this stuff, but at some point he might want to go back to college football, and there's no way.
Oh, I don't. After he was fired from Tennessee, I thought that was enough to put the nail in the coffin for his future in college.
Saban would have taken him back.
Maybe, but
no, he does all the time. I mean, that's not even an argument. But if he does this, then even Nick Saban might tell him, dude.
You know, I don't need your dirty laundry. Yeah,
well,
you
were really a rat here, and you know, we can't have you.
And I think you do bring up a very fair point in that the NCAA's, I guess, hold over college football programs just kind of lifted in July. Whenever NIL rules came into play, now that players are able to be paid, what is the NCAA there for?
The exchange of money now becomes more like a parking ticket before, when it used to be, a first degree felony. It just does. People have lost their outrage over college athletes, getting cash.
We're over
because,
it.
Well, we're over it because the schools are getting, you know, such ridiculous amounts of money that that any reasonable human being would say, you know, the athletes do deserve. I'm not smart enough to know how athletes should be paid. And I think right now with the NIL stuff, they're at least getting compensated. But good grief, how could you sit here and root for the schools with the amount of money they're making? And now, you know, they're going to go to probably a 12-team playoff, and there's going to be even more money for everybody. That and basketball. I don't want to hear, somebody accepting a few bucks from a coach.
No, to me, from the very beginning, this all seemed very fishy, especially coming from Jeremy Pruitt, a guy who's a disgruntled ex-employee of the University of Tennessee, a guy who really, I think, kind of knows that his pool of potential jobs shrunk so much, and he was trying to look out for himself financially.
Well, the other part of this is, from the outside looking in, at least initially, that Tennessee wanted to fire Jeremy Pruitt and not pay him the rest of his contract
because he had a boatload of money left on his contract.
Yeah. And that's sort of in vogue now, and a lot of schools have tried to pull that with varying degrees of success. The lawyer that that Pruitt's using now represented David Beatty, who was at Kansas, and Beatty got his money. They tried to trump up all these, you know, all these charges that he did this and he did that. Mm-hmm. And I think his, you know, Pruitt's lawyer is saying that Tennessee is operating out of the same playbook. But it seems like. You know, Pruitt was guilty of a lot more violations. And, you know, it cracks me up how Philip Fulmer just sort of walks away from this pretty much unscathed, even though he basically got fired by the university. But he, you know, he brought this into their house with his brilliant, you know, coaching search. Just brilliant. You got Mel Tucker out there who's got Michigan State undefeated. And Philip Fulmer, you know, obviously doesn't know a head coach from a hot rock because, you know, you saw what happened, you know, with his choice of Pruitt. That was just genius. You know, just because he breathed Nick Saban's air, you know, doesn't make him a good coach. So, again, you know, Phil Fulmer is basically the Teflon man in all this.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We're taking your thoughts on this, taking your thoughts on the Titans. And coming up next, we had a Thursday night game last night. How that may have implications on a Tennessee Titan. We'll get into that coming up next. But before we do that, allow me to tell you that ESPN 94.9 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in this Sunday as Nashville SC takes on Orlando. Pregame starts at 2:45 p.m. and the match begins at 3 o'clock p.m. Caroline Fenton, Mark Howard filling in for Jared Stillman. You're listening to Stillman & Company, and we are live on ESPN 102.5 The Game.